that's one of those myths. The one is you can't do it on large scale, and the other one, you can't feed the planet with it. And both of them are very well spread. Both of them are absolute bullshit.
Bonjour, bonjour, and welcome to one of the best of episodes of Mission First, the podcast to learn from successful entrepreneurs changing the world for the better. Listen to this snippet of the episode with Philip Birke, co-founder of Climate Farmers, as he debunks both of these myths.
Does a farmer from a regenerative farm is supposed to, you know, stay small and be in the context there, or is it possible to scale?
First of all, regen farms can be massively large scale. And that's also why I gave the example in the very beginning, because people often think of market gardeners, etc. I was last week speaking at the Climate Change Summit in Bucharest, and there I met some farmers from Eastern Europe, a Ukrainian farmer who has 5,000 hectares and is doing regenerative agriculture. And that there's no size limitation, essentially. There's always just an adaptation to the context that you're in. So I think that that's one of those myths. The one is you can't do it on large scale, and the other one, you can't feed the planet with it. And both of them are very well spread by the, well, I think chemical fertilizer is probably the ones which are doing a great job there. Both of them are absolute bullshit. It's really annoying me because I don't think we will be able to feed the planet in the way how we're growing right now, because we're destroying our soils. We see harvest going down. We see the addiction to the chemical inputs going up of the crops. We see farmers suffering because they can't pay the rising prices, and they need to use more and more and more and more in order to get the same kind of rush as people maybe see, you know, the more alcohol you drink, the more alcohol you need to get drunk. And you enter this vicious cycle. And we enter that vicious cycle as a society in the way how we're growing our food. That's insane. For me, there's no alternative towards that transition. But we're still nowhere close to where we need to get, because we have too many people which are profiting from the current system.
But to talk about the transition, you mentioned three different points you found on which you could help farmers transition. So can you explain us a bit these points, and probably it goes into your economical model?
The very first thing to always start with is for many people, a surprising one. The biggest issue, and I think it's important to say here again what the context is that I'm operating in, which is the European context. So everything that I'm saying based on 5 years of working on this in Europe. It could be very different in other countries on other continents, right? So I cannot speak for people in America. I cannot speak for people in Africa or anywhere outside of Europe. But in Europe, we have a massive issue with a lack of appreciation for farmers. I grew up in a village. I grew up in a very agricultural context. Not a single person in my high school wants to become a farmer. It's quite the opposite. In school, they tell you, yeah, if you don't learn well and you fail in school, then you have to become a farmer. That's messed up, because farmers are the backbone of our society. They're doing a highly complex job managing thriving ecosystems if they're doing regenerative agriculture. But nevertheless, it's not something you would say on the first date that you're on, you know, it's not something you would put in your Tinder profile. And it's not something that people are proud of at the moment, because we are not perceiving it in society like that, right? It's pretty cool to be a podcaster, cool to be an entrepreneur, cool to be a consultant, but not to be a farmer. And that led to the fact that right now the average age of farmers in the European Union is in the late 50s. And it's very logical that that is one of the biggest blockers that we have now in the transition, because imagine you're on this farm in the late 50s. Over the last 30, 40 years, your government, your consultants, your sales agents, everybody has been pushing chemical input costs on you. If you're organic one, then organic input costs. Everybody has been selling you massive tractors, big plows, you know, and been telling you that that is the right way forward and the right way to do it. And if you were then at a point that you are 5 years before retirement and someone comes along and is like, by the way, have you ever considered that what you've been doing for the last 30 years was maybe not a good idea, and that you should maybe be doing something completely different? And by the way, you've been causing climate change by your activities. Did you know that? And people are like, what? And they're not very open to that, because there's a cognitive dissonance for most people to acknowledge that something that you've been doing yourself was wrong. We don't like to do that. We're not trained to do that. And that is a massive issue. So the biggest driver, and of course there's exceptions, but the biggest driver that we are seeing in the Region Ag transition is young farmers, is age. Mostly farmers between 30 and 45, which didn't want to take over the farm with their parents because they saw them struggle, went into the city, became a consultant, realized this is also not making me happy, and then going back to the farm with the parents and saying, okay, I'm going to take over the farm, but only if you let me do it my way, and if you let me take it regenerative. And then the farmer like, okay. As long as you take over the farm. you do your real experiments, and then you have different transition journeys. Sometimes it works very beautiful, like in Germany. I know a beautiful example, the Eichenhof. Sometimes it doesn't work so well because it's hard for the parents to let go. But the core thing is a lack of appreciation for farmers. We need to make farming sexy again, and that's why we took the name Climate Farmers, and that's why we're doing a lot of storytelling and explaining why we believe regenerative farmers are the heroes of our times, and that's why we believe that we need to start appreciating them more and also rewarding them more financially, because farmers have consecutively getting less and less and less money off the food supply chain. I think in Germany, it's now 4% of a liter of milk is going to the farmer, or 4% of bread and 16% of milk, I think. But it's ridiculous. Most farmers that I know get 30 to 35 cents for a liter of milk. And in the supermarket, I think you're paying 150 or something like this for that. And all the work is done, right? This is milk. Like, it gets filled in a freaking container and it gets brought to the supermarket and put in there. Why is a farmer getting 35 cents of your milk when you're paying something like 1.50 euro for that? That makes no freaking sense to me. And that just makes it a not attractive job. And that is the first issue.
Is it as hard to work when you make a regenerative farm? I think the suicidal rate among farmers is also like probably the highest, if not one of the highest on earth. Because also I remember like farmers, they don't have holidays. I mean, people in my village, they work all the time. I knew other kids were from farmers, and they had to help their parents all the time. And it was a very, very, very demanding job. Is it also a pro side of regenerative agriculture? Do we have to change that model too if you want to attract more young people there?
No, I wouldn't say it's easier. I think it's more enjoyable. It's more fun. It's more rewarding. All of the regenerative farmers that I know are people which are generally happy people, despite the fact that they don't get paid for most of the ecosystem services that they're providing, that they don't get recognition in society, but they love what they're doing, right? They're doing it for intrinsic reasons. So I think it's definitely a group of people that, that love what they're doing, but it's a fucking hard job. It will always be a fucking hard job. And especially if you want to farm in line with nature, like most farmers that I know work 12, 14, 16 hours a day. But it's okay, because if you love what you're doing and you're fairly rewarded for it, then I don't think there's a problem with that necessarily, you know? Like, working is not something, like, I definitely had my weeks where I worked way too many hours as well. But if you love what you're doing, then that's fine. But the problem is just that in the system where we are set up, also because farmers don't get the money, they can't hire someone else to help them with that, right? Because essentially, you could be splitting this up. You don't need one person to be there for 16 hours, but you need someone. And because the finances are so tight on the farm, there's no budget available. So what we should be doing is moving forward. And I know that some farms, for example, Gut Heiderhof outside of Hamburg, they made that decision at some point to increase the life quality of the farmers and to try to hire more people, which meant they had to raise their prices, which is what people then not used to again, you know? And if we want to have farmers to have a higher life quality and a better work-life balance, essentially, then we would have to pay more for our food so people can pay people and can also take holidays and pay someone while they go on holidays, right? Because that's the whole situation. It's very hard to get good workers on farms as well, just because the salaries are so bad, just because the money that ends up in the pockets of farmers is so little.
Imagine what would happen if we would start paying consultants less and farmers more.
Exactly. That's the world I want to live in.
Yeah. Yes.
Although I have to say, Region Ag consultants also do an amazing job, you know, and that's also okay. I think we can all do with a little less life coaches and a little less. There's definitely a lot of things in our society which get very highly rewarded financially, but don't give a lot of benefits to society, right? I mean, we still live in a society where people who work for oil and gas companies get the highest salaries. I'm pretty sure if you work at Bayer, you get an amazing salary, you know? So the problem that we're having is that those jobs which actually are destroying our planet are the jobs which reward you financially, and those jobs which give us a benefit, either be it social jobs or be it sustainable jobs or being at farmers, they get consecutively cut down because you get a reward from social factors. Why would you should get money? That's the mindset that we need to change in our society. You know, you damage the planet, you get a bad salary. You reward the planet, you do something good for society, you should get a good salary. And that switch has not happened yet.
If you found this part useful and you are into agriculture, accelerator programs, nonprofits, community building, or food supply chain,
Follow the link in the description and listen to the full episode with Philip. It's a real masterclass in entrepreneurship.